powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
All right, every week we do this. We at least attempt to do this. We attempt to do a game show. I think so far it's come off pretty well.
Yeah.
You want to just hit the music there, Curtis, and give us a little...
Yeah.
What's the name of this game again?
Ravens. You almost held it together, Curtis, until the very end.
Yeah, it was...
It's tough.
I was leaking oil coming around third on that one.
That's all right.
That's hard.
Yeah.
All right, Stacey.
Okay. Tom.
Yeah,
you have the first question.
All right.
And you guys are tied up right now, right?
Doing,
the series
yeah, we
is
are.
Tied.
And we
all
do
right.
Five questions apiece here.
Five questions apiece. Yep. Tom, true or false?
False.
The Ravens. Tom? The Ravens and the Seahawks rank in the top five in total offense.
That is a true statement.
Just give them the answer.
You know
why
what,
don't you?
Jake? The Seahawks are number five with 399 yards per game. The Ravens are number one with 450.7 yards per game. Jake, next question. True or false? Both teams also rank in the top five in rushing defense.
False.
I need to make this tougher. The Ravens are number four, allowing just 80.7 rushing yards per game, but the Seahawks have fallen to number 11.
You know what's crazy about that, though?
What? I thought that they would be higher.
The Seahawks were fourth, okay? They were fourth last week against the Cleveland Browns. They fall to 11th, but do you know where they're at, though? They're still under 100 yards rushing.
Right? That's the thing. Which means there are a lot of good rushing defenses in the NFL right now. Or at least that the top teams are all limiting to 90 yards or less. Within the top 10, it's all 90 yards or less per game.
I'm surprised by that.
Pretty interesting. Yeah, me too.
Tom.
What?
Ravens Hall of Famer Ray Lewis had 13 career Pro Bowl nominations. That ties for second in NFL history. There are five players who have more. Name two.
Five players who have more than 13 Pro Bowl.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot to say, the first two names that come out of your mouth are your answer. So don't be throwing out guesses.
Okay.
Come on, Tom. Clock's a ticking.
Walter Payton.
What's your second guess?
This is Pro Bowl nominations?
Yes.
Tom Brady.
You got Tom Brady. The five are Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Tony Gonzalez, Bruce Matthews, and Merlin Olsen. All have 14, which is the most in NFL history. So they're all tied. Sorry, Tom. Jake. In what year did the Baltimore Ravens become a franchise?
Oh, come on, man. Dude, I had to answer a question with two answers, and you give him that cupcake?
Tom,
what is that?
Do you know how old Jake was in this year?
Who cares? He knows his football history.
Jake, what year?
The Ravens?
The Ravens.
He's not going to get
it. The Baltimore Ravens.
Never mind.
See? Do you see, Tom?
'96.
Oh! Tom, you ruined the answer. What's the score right now? Where are we?
Yes! It is 2-1, Jake.
Let's go!
You hate to see it.
Oh, do you, though? Do you hate to see it?
Tom?
You gave me a question with two answers with no multiple choice.
Tom
what
Brady
is that?
And Peyton Manning.
Thomas.
That could have been obvious.
All right. Tom, true or false, the Seahawks and Ravens both rank in the top 10 in points per game.
True.
Was that like a, it's so easy?
No, it's not easy. I just don't care.
The Ravens are number two overall with 30.7 points. Seahawks are number seven. Jake.
Yes.
The winless Cincinnati Bengals, also in the AFC North, have two interceptions this season. True or false, the Ravens rank behind them in pass defense. See, Tom's more intrigued by this question. He's looking a little hopeful.
I'm just more intrigued.
No, that is false. The Ravens are ahead. What?
Cincy is actually just about a league average at number 16. The Ravens rank number 25 against the pass. They're allowing 269.5 yards per game. Tom.
2-2.
Tom, true or false, the Seahawks also rank behind the Bengals in pass defense. I like this pair of questions.
When you say
really
pass defense, are we talking yards per game or points?
Yards per game. Yards allowed per
yards
game.
Yards allowed per game.
Strictly yards.
Behind the Bengals?
Yep.
I'm going to say true.
The Seahawks are number 23 in passing yardage, allowing 267. Are we tied up?
Well, he has to go before we have the same amount of.
Wait. So he's got.
I've got three. You've got two.
Okay. So.
Okay. Jake, who leads the Ravens in scoring? It's a multiple choice. Okay. Lamar Jackson, tight end Mark Andrews, or running back Mark Ingram.
Oh my gosh, this is hard.
It is hard. Could be any one of them.
It's between Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram for sure.
Curtis,
for
do you know the answer to all these?
Yeah.
Like in your head?
In my head, I'd say about 90% of these I knew. Stacy was quizzing me on them earlier.
Yeah, okay. I was trying to test how hard they were.
I actually wrote one of these questions.
When you talk
too.
About like,
do you want to ask yours to next? It. I'll ask yours. I'll ask Curtis's question next.
Okay. Mark Ingram.
I know. It is Mark Ingram. He has 44 points this year.
Did you guess or did you have a reason to get to?
I had a reason.
What was the reason?
Well, Mark Ingram, this is a running offense.
Yeah.
If they get inside the low red zone, they're going to try and pound it in with Mark Ingram.
Okay.
Tom.
My reasoning.
That's impressive.
This is Curtis's question. It's tough. So blame him.
All right.
Tom, how many consecutive games did the 2000 Baltimore Ravens go without scoring a touchdown?
I think four.
You're so close.
Five games.
Okay, one for Jake.
That's a great question.
Thank you. I
should have
got that.
Isn't it?
It was five? Yeah. It was five?
Five straight they went without scoring a touchdown.
You know, wow. I feel bad that I didn't get that right.
Shout out to my guy Trent Dilfer.
Jake, the Seahawks have 10 sacks this year. True or false, the Ravens have within two of that total.
Say that question one more time.
Okay, the Seahawks have 10 sacks this year.
Yes.
True or false, the Ravens have within two sacks of that total.
True.
It's true. The Ravens have 11 sacks. I thought that they would have more.
You just beat me, by the way.
Yeah.
4-3.
I know.
I'm trying to see if there's a question that I didn't ask on here. I mean, we're already done. Jake won. Let's see here.
This just made Jake's weekend, man.
It did. It really did. We did total defense. The Seahawks rank, true or false, the Seahawks rank higher than the Ravens. The Ravens are higher in total defense, which I think you guys could have each guessed that one, right?
Whew, wow.
So, yeah, other than that, you guys.
Those are some tough questions in there.
This week was interesting.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Tom, you were so close with that one. I wouldn't have guessed it at all.
With the 2000 Ravens?
Yeah, they went almost a third of their season without scoring a touchdown.
True.
Consecutively.
Yeah, they actually managed to score 15 points in one of those games. So Matt Stover, he was working that right leg overtime.
Yeah.
How many games did they win in that stretch?
12 games.
No, in that stretch.
They actually went 2-3.
They went 2-3 because the defense was scoring points.
Yeah.
Isn't that unreal, though? You still got two wins without your offense getting in the end zone.
That's why they're one of the best defenses of all time.
Yep.
That's insane.
2000 Ravens.
Now you guys know.
How many of those guys on that defense, Curtis, can you name?
Can
you name the whole defense?
No.
You got Chris McAllister coming out of Arizona.
Yeah, bear down. Tony Siragusa on the line. Peter Boulware.
Right.
Jamie Sharper.
Rod
Ray
Woodson.
Lewis. Yeah. Wasn't Samari Roll on that team?
Samari Roll was, yeah.
Rod Woodson.
Yeah,
Rod Woodson was there. But Terrell Suggs and Ed Reed were not.
No, they came later, which is
kind of
a real testament to their ability to find talent on the defensive side of the ball.
No kidding. Hey, tell those two behind you to quiet down, will you?
It's our engineering department here.
Gee whiz. All right, you want to do four downs? Let's just do it right now.
Let's go.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
This is my question to you, Jake. From me to you, baby.
All right, let's go.
I like how you guys are already making up after a really tough loss for Tom.
You know what? I respect that win.
That was tough.
It was well earned.
These questions were, I think, harder than either Browns, or Rams.
Yeah.
Would you guys swap jerseys after this?
Sign them?
Absolutely
think so.
Not.
Yeah. What?
No, you better not.
Absolutely
oh, I
not.
I forgot their stance on swapping jerseys is a negative.
Yeah. Tom's not a big fan of that.
No, I'm not. But the reason why you don't want to do that today, my 1 o'clock sweat came on.
Oh, no. Got here almost early.
Well, it's usually around between 1 and 1:30.
Got it.
So I turned the heat in here down.
That's good.
But you don't want to wear this shirt.
1 o'clock
good.
Sweat.
Well, I would never wear it. That's not what you do with the signings. They don't take their jerseys.
Oh, they don't. No, in soccer, they do, though.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, in football, they don't. They just hang it up. They just like put it in like a shadow box and hang it up on the wall.
No. In soccer, they wear it like, you know, Zinedine Zidane.
Huh.
Anyway.
On to the question.
How hard is it, Drew, for a backup QB to truly stay ready? I'm not just talking about walking around on the sidelines and looking at the clipboard and saying, hey, Russell, good job. I'm talking about really staying ready to go into that game like Matt Moore did last night and steer the ship.
I'll tell you what, it's extremely difficult because as a backup quarterback in the NFL, especially when you play behind guys like Russell Wilson, Matthew Stafford, Phillip Rivers, guys that you know aren't coming out of the game, it's really easy to just kind of get in the routine of, I'm just here to prepare the starting quarterback and really not put forth your best effort in terms of getting your own self prepared, helping the team, but not getting yourself. And so you have to go above and beyond getting mental reps for yourself, spending extra time after practice throwing to guys, and also while the starting quarterback is getting reps, you are playing that scenario out in your mind. You'll actually see guys, backup quarterbacks, go through the motions behind the quarterback, you know, far removed,
right?
You know, trying to get that live, you know, simulate that live rep. So it's extremely difficult. It's not an easy task.
Is it harder for a veteran than it is? I could see a young player coming into the league and being all hungry and saying, oh, like all wide-eyed and wanting to get as much a part of, or be as much a part of the action as he can. But for a guy like Gino who's been around a while and who's already had starting jobs, I would think it would be harder for him to stay engaged mentally. Maybe not him specifically, but even a guy like Matt Moore who's backing up Patrick Mahomes. It's like, well, when the heck am I ever going to get in there? Well, last night.
Yeah, and he was a longtime backup with the Miami Dolphins as well. And so for those guys, though, the one thing that they have over younger guys is they have experience. They've been there. They've done that. They know what it's like to be in the huddle, to be out on the field, and to be able to handle that environment. So it's extremely hard. And so that's why you always love to see when a guy like Matt Moore can step in and be successful.
Second down. What down is it, Stacey?
Second.
What is Washington's biggest challenge with Oregon? Oregon.
The crazy stat about Oregon, we talk about not scoring touchdowns. Well, Oregon's defense hasn't allowed a touchdown since the first game of this season.
That was my best whistle.
They are playing at a very high level.
I want you to say that one more time. Their defense hasn't allowed a touchdown since the first game of the season?
Yeah.
Who the heck have they played? Our sisters of the poor?
They played some tough. They haven't been playing, you know, some of the best teams in the country. But it has been a stifling defense for the Oregon Ducks. And
so
this is going to be an incredible challenge for the Washington Huskies. And this has been an obvious concern for Husky fans as you watch them. What kind of offense are you? How productive can you be? This is going to be a tremendous challenge for Jacob Eason, Bush Hamden, and this offense.
The Huskies are scoring a touchdown in this game.
You would like to think so.
They're scoring more than one. Over under on the number of touchdowns.
I have faith.
Two and a half.
This group's going to be able to do that. Yeah, I would say that this group is going to be able to at least put 21 points. That's what they're averaging right now.
Yeah.
If this group wants to be a real contender, this defense for the Huskies is going to have to stay in it. They're going to have to limit the Oregon Ducks' rushing attack and Justin Herbert from making big plays if they want to stay in this one because of that Oregon defense being so stingy.
Jake, that is unreal. I learned something new today. I didn't realize that Oregon's defense was that great. I'm looking at this article. They've kept all five of their opponents to single digits in scoring for the first time since 1958 and they're ranked third nationally.
But who have they played?
Their three conference games at Stanford, at home against Cal, at home against Colorado, and their remaining two non-conference games are against Nevada and Montana.
But still,
they haven't played a ranked team yet, but three straight conference opponents.
Yeah.
And California was undefeated in the conference coming into that game.
Mark.
It's impressive.
Mark Fox.
It's Cal basketball.
I know. Hold on. The guy who coaches Cal is... It's not Jonathan Smith at Oregon State.
The head coach?
The head coach at Cal is...
Used to be the Huskies D coordinator.
Starts with a J.
Right.
Sound it out.
Jeremy Stevens.
No, that would be...
No.
Justin.
Wilcox!
Yeah.
Oh, man, that feels good.
Proud of you.
I can't believe I got that. Third down.
Third down.
We're already there.
We are?
Got it. Okay, well, we're here. We converted.
Stacy.
Fourth down.
You should see the chicken scratch I have on this sheet. It's ridiculous.
I can't read your handwriting.
No, you can't.
Tweeted it out before.
I can barely read it. What Russell Wilson stat could put the Ravens at a disadvantage on Sunday?
So this is actually interesting to me because this tweet came out a while ago, but I didn't realize that the Ravens blitzed as often as they do. So this was from the Seattle Times. The Ravens are blitzing on 49.3% of opponents' dropback plays. That's according to Pro Football Reference. Well, the best quarterback against the blitz this year is Russell Wilson. His quarterback rate, his passer rating against the blitz is 141.8, and it's not even close. I mean, he's quite ahead of even number two Teddy Bridgewater at 128, and then 126, 120. It kind of goes down from there. So he's phenomenal against pressure this year.
Do we know how often he's been blitzed compared to those other guys?
Quite often.
Quite often?
Quite often, yeah. Okay. I would say that the numbers would be high, one, because of the Pittsburgh Steelers game. But also, you know, the Rams tried to challenge him quite a bit. There's been teams trying to get after him.
Is Dick LeBeau still their defensive coordinator? The Steelers is not.
No, he's not.
But he was like in the last 10 years, right?
Yeah, I mean he was the Steelers defensive coordinator
for like 30
for a
years,
long time.
Right?
Yeah, legendary.
Fourth down. What's one thing about the Ravens, Jake, that we haven't discussed this week that could be a factor in the game?
So we talked a lot about this offense. We've talked a lot about the pressures. We even talked about the fact that Marcus Peters has been traded to the Ravens and is going to play a significant amount. The one person that we haven't talked about is cornerback Jimmy Smith, who is their number one corner. And the reason why we haven't talked about him or discussed him at all is because he's been injured the last couple weeks. And now it looks like, I'm really interested to see when this injury report comes out for the Ravens today. But yesterday, he was limited in practice. So the most that he has practiced up to this point. If Jimmy Smith is back and practicing in this game, it just adds to the concern of what this game could be. Because now you've got Jimmy Smith, you've got Marcus Peters, who... Honestly, I'm excited about playing, but still a potential to be a very good football player, and Marlon Humphreys, who's one of the best nickel corners in the game. So this secondary would gain a huge boost with the addition of Jimmy Smith and having Earl Thomas back there deep.
We were watching some old footage today of Earl Thomas, and it's interesting in football the way superstar, I'll say corners, maybe corners, wide receivers, when they play their best, when they're at the best point in their career, like Earl Thomas from 2012 to 2015, right? He's probably maybe even a little after that. He's probably never going to be better than that. But in 2012 and 13, it's tough to call somebody who's only been in the league 2 or 3 years one of the best, unless it's just really, really obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you recognize that they're the best. And at that point, they're not, because somebody else, some younger skilled position player, has come along and has more or less supplanted them. It's tough for me, somebody who isn't like, fantasy boy, you know, who somebody who monitors every last. I'm not a big draft guy, so I'm not monitoring all these rookies. It's tough for me to know when guys are really at their peak. I feel like I recognize them as being at their peak when they're just past it a little bit.
I think that's how long it takes most NFL fans, though. Because I think a lot of the times you don't realize it's, first of all, you're like, wow, what a breakout game for this guy. I would love to go back to 2013 or 2012, rather, 2011, and hear some of the broadcasts of how they're talking about players that end up being phenomenal players. Like, I even went back to like Cam Chancellor's, one of his first tackles in the league was on special teams on a return. And it's just so interesting hearing the way that like the broadcasters are talking about players, like, yeah, you know, he's good and, you know, tough battle to take that spot. And it's all positive, but it's just interesting because I think our acknowledgement as fans, viewers, writers, critics.
It takes a while.
It takes a while.
Unless you're Patrick Mahomes and you get out on the field and you just explode.
Right.
Or quarterbacks are easier.
It's a bit different.
We can all pay attention to quarterbacks, even running backs to an extent. Like,
to
shine
as a defensive back, you have to do a lot.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's why with the Legion of Boom and what they were about, and Richard Sherman in particular, you know, his campaigning of himself early on was part of the reason why people caught on to the Legion of Boom as quickly as they did, because you had Earl Thomas, you had Richard Sherman, who was talking about him being the best corner in the game compared to Darrelle Revis, and now you have your eyes on that particular player, trying to figure out, okay, is this guy legit or not? And then you see Cam Chancellor and the rest of the group performing at an elite level. So I think the Legion of Boom era, people were on them and caught that during their prime. I agree with you. I think the national pundits did too.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think that they were all on board with that, but it was because they were so loud and boisterous and in your face about it.
That's true.
They didn't let people ignore them.
Right. They mm-hmm. demanded the attention. And when Richard Sherman was yelling in the Aaron Andrews interview there, when he said, "I'm the best corner in the game," he was right.
Yes.
In that moment, he was the best corner in the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though maybe not everybody knew that, because they were still back on Revis Island.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct. But you're right. In that point in time, he was talking about himself and backing that play up, and that's where it's a unique time for sure in Seattle sports history. But you look at all these other players that are up and coming, they won't be officially established until maybe – you know, 2 years down the road.
Who are we talking about, though?
Well,
besides Patrick Mahomes?
Mm. Oh, no. I thought you meant Seahawks players.
Oh, no. Not Seahawks players.
We're talking about just around the league.
Just around the league in general.
Yeah. And maybe around the league is a better example, because it's one thing for the three of us to watch players and say, oh, man, like, this guy's really emerging. But for folks around the league outside of Seattle to see it, I think takes a special kind of talent,
too. Let me give you one Seahawk example. Chris Carson, to me, is a perfect example of this guy.
Can you explain why in, like, 10 minutes?
I sure can.
Halftime show's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You want to finish your point about Chris Carson?
Heck yeah, I do.
Then finish it.
All right. Chris Carson last year, I think, we're talking about, before we head into the break, was players recognizing for being great too late.
Right.
That by the time we recognize them, they're already kind of...
they're over the hill.
Reached their peak, yes. And I think for Chris Carson, he is one of those guys that by the time the national media really starts to recognize what type of player he is, it might be too late. And the other one actually coming in on the 253 on the 710 text line is Tyler Lockett, is another great name.
Yeah, he's been around for 5 years.
Isn't that weird?
Yes, but he's never been the number one until really last year. He kind of took over in that role and had a perfect pass rating and all those things. But now you see Tyler playing at a very high level, probably going to be a 1,000-yard receiver in receiving yards, and it may take another year or two for him to really get recognized. But Chris Carson is a heck of a football player who ran for over 1,000 yards. He was top five in rushing yards last year. Just the way that he runs the football, I think, is a very unique style, and I mean, one of the few guys that actually seeks out contact and delivers as a running back.
Do you guys play fantasy football or no?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, I do.
It stresses me out. You do?
Hold on. I've played it like maybe 3 or 4 times. This year happens to be one of them. But is Tyler Lockett the type of guy that you would draft?
No.
Late round. But the thing is with fantasy, sometimes it's about points and not necessarily. Like, Tyler Lockett is like a top 10 receiver in the league. He's reliable. He's the top receiver for his team. He's the number one receiver on the number 5 offense in the league, right?
Yeah,
but he's not going to get you a ton of points because the Seahawks don't pass for...
That's my point.
Yeah.
That's my point about
it's
asking
same
about
as Russell
fantasy.
Wilson. Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of people learn about wide receivers.
Oh, that's a good
point. Young ones especially.
Yeah, through fantasy.
Through fantasy. Who's putting up the biggest numbers? And so the reason why maybe you haven't or people don't know as much about Tyler Lockett nationally... it's because he's never been drafted. I mean, I compare Lockett more to like a I don't know, Emmanuel Sanders.
Okay.
Like, just in terms of name recognition, like, you know it when you hear it. You know he's a wide receiver, and you know he plays, you know where he plays. But you're, it's like, okay, is that guy really elite? Well, no, he's not.
Yeah.
Because there's those other guys who put up just
massive,
astronomical numbers.
That's a great point, though, as far as fantasy football shaping the way that people value players and the way that they interpret them, at least when you aren't familiar with a team.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the average,
like,
and
how else do you know
average NFL fan.
How else do you know that last year Keenan Allen was just lighting it up? How else would you know? You're not watching Charger games every week.
Right.
But you know if you got him on your fantasy team, either if he's on your team or somebody else's team, he's beating you with him.
Yes, and it's sad because Tyler is such a special football player. Undersized, but is lightning fast. He's dynamic. And one of the most underrated things about Tyler is his ability to catch go balls, contested go balls. He doesn't go up and leap up and make these spectacular catches like the traditional receiver, but he knows how to box guys out.
Yeah.
So, like, just as the ball is coming down, he can shoulder them and lean into them to where it now allows that ball to come in. And no better example than the spectacular play between him and Russell Wilson in the Rams game in the corner of the end zone. He boxed out Weddle before the ball ended up coming and landing perfectly in the corner.
So Oregon comes up here, and the game is prime, well, quote-unquote prime time, 12:30 on a Saturday tomorrow. Is that prime? Because that's 3 or 4:30 Eastern, right? What is it? 3:30 Eastern.
But there's certain time slots.
That's a good slot, though,
on national
east.
On national TV for college football, and 12:30 on ABC.
The
is
day
one of those
game,
time
the,
slots.
The afternoon game. But I guess my point is, usually they would put that game on like 1 o'clock or 12:30 Eastern time, and it would be much earlier here. But I guess since it's two Pac-12 teams, that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Yep. So this is a huge matchup. This is a huge matchup with a lot of at stake for the Pac-12 North and honestly for the landscape of the Pac-12, because I believe that these two teams, whether it's Washington or Oregon, those are going to be the teams that decide who's going to be the Pac-12 champs.
I can't believe what you said before.
Oregon's defense?
Oregon hasn't allowed a touchdown.
I know. I had no idea.
And who played them week one?
Auburn.
Oh, well.
Yes.
Auburn.
They should have won that game. They should have won that game. They blew it. They blew a huge lead. 21-point lead. It's crazy. So this is going to be one heck of a test. And you're looking at, when you talk about from the Huskies, there's going to be a lot that you find out about the Washington Huskies. Because, one, you've got so many young guys. You've got 9 defensive starters that you've replaced, right? And they've been up and down throughout the entire year in terms of their productivity. Then you've got an offense that also has been up and down, a quarterback in Jacob Eason, who has looked like a surefire, you know, number one pick overall, to then people questioning, you know, is this guy a legitimate first rounder? Mostly because of the offense's production and Bush Hamden in his ability to call plays at the right time and get this offense into a flow. So this is a big moment for the Huskies to really stand up and say, we are a legit team. I know we've lost versus Stanford, but we're here to stay. This is going to be a heck of a matchup.
I think this is a huge game for them. And I've made excuses so far for the Huskies and said this or that, or why do Husky fans get upset? Even just from a pride standpoint, this is a border game. Look, you want to know that your team is still a power, right? And if a team like Oregon comes up here and beats you in your own building, like, you may not be able to make the college football playoff every year, and as fans, you have to accept that. But within the conference, you're not going to be bullied around by that team. That's the one thing that cannot happen.
Correct. And when you talk about expectations as a fan base and as a program,
that's perfectly fair.
Yeah, you can't let that happen.
Nope. Can't do it. We've talked about how this is a must-win game. I assert that it's not.
And you thought it was a weak take. And yet it's getting, like I said, the text line all fired up.
Usually you come on radio and, well, Radio 101, the first thing they tell you, have an opinion. Don't come on the radio and say, well, I could see it either way. And yet, I don't think that this game is all that important in terms of the standings, in terms of this team's confidence. Look, if the Ravens come up to CenturyLink Field and they blow out the Seahawks, that's going to be alarming. But if the Seahawks play the type of game they normally play and they lose 31-29, it's going to suck. But I'm not going to be too mad about it. I'm not going to be pointing my finger at the team saying, what are you guys doing?
Right.
Because that's the type of team they are. Look, they're out of conference, the Ravens are. It doesn't affect you as far as tiebreakers. I guess it does this maybe with common opponents. So you have to hope that the Ravens beat the 49ers too. But I'm not a believer that the 49ers are going to run the table here. I think that the Seahawks are still in very good playoff position, even if they lose this game.
They still have, you're right, it's not a lost cause. If they lose this game, it's not a lost cause. They're still in quote-unquote striking distance of the 49ers because of the way the Niners' schedule goes down the stretch. It just gives yourself an opportunity to be that much closer and give yourself the best chance to win the division versus a team in the 49ers that look very legitimate right now. And that, to me, is vital. It's important. And if this Seahawks team is going to continue to build confidence both offense and defensively, adding Jaron Reed back into the mix, to me, this is a must-win that you have to continue to keep going in the direction you want and to keep up with the 49ers.
Yeah, the more we keep talking about this, the more I find myself
agreeing with Tom.
And I don't like it. I don't like who I am right now.
I love it.
But, I mean, it's not that I still... Every game, you could say every game is a must-win game when the record matters more than anything in football. And
sure,
no one's saying that a win never matters. Like, no one wants to lose a game. No fan watching wants to lose a game. That being said, I do agree with the performance aspect of it. If I'm a fan, I would not feel as good about a win if the defense didn't get any pressures or sacks or hits. And, you know, maybe Russell Wilson had an off day, which I don't think he will. But if something else goes wrong and you have kind of an ugly win, I think it's harder to feel good about that, even though a win's a win, Jake, than it is about a solid performance and then the Ravens are just lights out.
I would never say that it's a must-win game in the middle of the season if it was not for the way that the 49ers are playing right now. If it was not for the fact that they are going to,
yeah,
in all likelihood, anything can happen, Tom. But in all likelihood, guys, the 49ers are going to be undefeated by the time you see them here in 3 weeks.
I do think I think the 49ers are more dangerous than you do.
They're playing the Panthers, they're playing the Panthers at home at Arizona, and then the Seahawks where? It doesn't matter.
The first time is at Levi's.
You guys think that they're going to win these next two games against Carolina and Arizona?
I think
Redskins, Carolina, and Arizona.
But Jake and I disagree, but we both think
the 49ers. Redskins. Yeah, I think they're going to roll over the Redskins.
Yeah.
Actually, hold on a minute.
Don't.
No, Tom. Tom, be realistic.
Jim Moore already floated that out there. You know what? We're going to make some kind of bet come just around the corner. Plus,
okay,
an injury update. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And if you missed the show, you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. All right, I want to bet you guys.
Okay.
Okay.
The 49ers, I need to think about whether I want to make this bet. Okay.
Okay.
You're saying the 49ers are going to be undefeated by the time they play the Seahawks.
Yes.
In the next
3 weeks.
They're going to beat the Reds. Is that game here or Washington or San Fran?
I don't know.
It's in Washington.
So we go on the road there, on the road to Washington. Then they're home against the Panthers, and they're on the road in division against Arizona.
Yes.
Correct.
They lose one of those games. I will bet you something right now they lose one of those games.
Okay. Do you want to bet something right now, or do you want to
Maybe we'll
make a bet.
You have to buy him some stupid
and then we'll decide
Snickers
what
bars.
That bet's going to be later on.
710-710, Coors Light text line. Text in some suggestions. I know Stacy and Jake will pour over them.
Okay. All
yeah,
right.
I'll check out the text line. I got my eyes on it.
Do you guys think I'm nuts?
No, because the reason I don't want to take this bet is I am like 60-40 that they could be upset by the Panthers.
Yeah, they're losing one of those games. I'm guaranteeing.
The 49ers defense is phenomenal and will keep them in it no matter what. I think, though, the Panthers defense has brought a lot of pressure.
Yeah, Panthers defense not bad. And by the way, I mean, their backup quarterback, Kyle Allen.
Yes.
He's playing pretty well.
I wouldn't even call him backup quarterback, Kyle Allen.
Oh, and you've got Christian McCaffrey.
He continues to keep playing this way. Cam Newton is going to be looking for another team.
Oh.
Promise you.
Really?
Yeah, well, with the way that Cam Newton's situation sets up with his cap space and all that. I mean, look, he can come out and play well if they give him that chance. But if Kyle Allen is continuing to win games, why would you pull him? But I firmly disagree with you guys that I think that the 49ers are definitely going to go 3-0. They will be undefeated by the time they face the Seahawks.
The 206 suggests dinner at El Gaucho.
I don't want any Mexican food.
Another 206.
El Gaucho's a steakhouse.
Soup.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Yes,
a very nice steakhouse.
They have good stuff.
All right.
It's a favorite of mine.
If Tom loses, he and Stacy will have to go 1 week without complaining about how the Hawks win games. First of all, I didn't complain. I had a three questions facing the Seahawks column on 710sports.com.
I'm not complaining. I don't complain about how they win.
No. I do. You know what? My column was written from quotes from Pete Carroll. So aim that his way.
Well, he's allowed to do what he wants. You can't.
Keep throwing them out there.
Steak dinner is the most popular choice so far.
Yes, so far it's been the most popular.
If you win.
If I win?
Yeah, I'll take you out for a steak.
You'll take me out for a steak?
What do I get?
Well, you're with Tom.
Can I go?
You're with Tom.
Stacey, okay. Are you in on this bet or not?
I'm too scared.
Then you need to step aside.
Fine, okay, I say they lose to Carolina.
Okay, so you're with me.
Yeah. So that's kind of nice. If you guys lose, then you guys can split the bill. Yeah. If I win, I have to pay for you both.
Can Curtis
come? And that makes sense because your scenario is probably more likely that they do run the table.
Right.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, not according to you guys.
We're taking a little bit of a risk, so we'll split the cost there.
Okay. All right. We'll figure it out.
Do we have the injury report out? What the heck is taking so long?
I know.
The Friday one comes out. Later this afternoon.
Today's injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. We just discussed Cam Newton there and Patrick Mahomes a little bit before that. Now, is Ziggy Ansah questionable?
He probably will be. So Pete Carroll said this morning in an interview with Dory Monson on Cairo Radio that Bradley McDougald and DJ Fluker will be game time decisions, that they will probably list Dwayne Brown as doubtful and that he will probably miss this week.
Yeah,
and
we knew that.
I think those are the notable ones. And let's see. Yeah, I think those are the big ones. DJ Fluker is amazing.
I didn't realize how many Twitter doctors there were.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
They were like a moth on a flame. It was incredible to see how many experts there were tweeting out about Patrick Mahomes' injuries.
Yeah.
It was insane.
And then comparing them to other injuries. Like I saw someone say, Victor Cruz had a hard time coming back from that. And it's like, you know, no, they're two very different injuries. A patellar tendon rupture is very different from having your kneecap dislocated.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, are these people actually doctors?
No. Okay. There's one guy, who is he? He's like a football NFL. He's actually a doctor, I think. And he just
like
kind of tweets about.
David Chow, I think is his name.
And he tweets about what he thinks he sees. I'm talking about
the people that
are like, look, my friend did this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Look, Tommy was out for 3 months and then he came back just fine.
How can even a doctor from afar diagnose injuries when he can't even see the player?
Well, it's
He's surrounded by
incredible because they actually are pretty spot on. Like,
yeah.
A lot of those people that were tweeting out about it, they were spot on with the injury. You know, talking about the dislocation and what that could possibly mean. You know, it's only a 2 to 4 week injury at best case, worst case. If surgery, he's out for the season.
You know
what? It ended up being that. It ended up being only they're saying, I think Adam Schefter tweeted that it's only a 3 week injury as of right now, the way that they're looking at it.
When players complain, like this is one area where I think I have Sherman's back. When players complain that we, the media, or whoever, treat these guys like they're just pieces of meat, I feel like he's right. It's like Patrick Mahomes or whatever player is laying on the ground. A man, a human being, is laying on the ground, hurting, in insane pain.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that must feel like to have your kneecap off,
right. For
example. And then everybody jumps on Twitter, whether they're credible or not, and starts debating when he's going to come back or, oh, this is only a 2 week.
See, I think that more with fantasy stuff.
Is,
like when Will
so,
Disley.
It's so callous.
It is. When Will Disley went down with his injury last week, I can't tell you how many tweets I saw that were like, oh, my fantasy team.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, even if you think that, keep it to yourself.
You know
there's no point to put that out there. This guy's year is over, and he's probably devastated.
I apologize if I'm up on a high horse about that.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that sometimes everyone watching that isn't on the field, and I'm including myself to make it fair, like, we all need to collectively remind ourselves that, like, you're not watching some video game. Like, these are real people.
It's not even a movie.
Exactly. It's not fantasy. They're real people.
A perfect example, real quick, is, you know, you have family in the stands of these football players. And a lot of, you get fans that are out there and they're saying these things about certain players. And the moment that a family member turns around and says, hey, that's my son, that's my brother, that's whatever, they completely change the script. You know, it's like, oh, man, okay, so that just humanized this guy, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes we get caught up in the moment and forget that stuff.
I think I'm just a wimp.
Yeah, maybe.
Michael Bumpus coming up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.